And welcome back in to the show that we still don't have a name for. I am one of the hosts, Rocco Scarsello. Sitting to my left is the man, the myth, the GM, Kramer Sansone.
Howdy, howdy.
How you doing, big dog?
You know, it's not too bad. It's good that we're back on the podcast scene again. It's our second episode.
I know. There's like at least six people who are just like waiting minute by minute checking Twitter. Your Twitter, not even mine.
Hey, you at least get the retweet on that, so that's okay.
I did get a retweet on that. I mean, is that what it feels like to be famous?
No,
like
no.
To make it in the sports radio world, you get a retweet on a podcast?
I don't know. I haven't made it yet.
I don't know. I mean, you're closer than me, it feels like. But either way, it's good we're doing this. It's good to be back. And obviously for, you know, the people who really, there are a handful of people who really were listening to us and really texted me and probably hit up Kramer too, saying you guys did good and we like hearing this sort of stuff. We want to be clear, we don't necessarily always have to do this on a Tuesday. It's a weekly thing. That's why we're doing it today on a Monday, one day after the best game, in my personal opinion, in Chiefs history. But we'll come at you at least once a week. That's the plan. And especially when something like this happens, though, it makes it a little bit easier to want to hop back into the studio immediately, because this is not an event that we're going to talk about probably, maybe ever. The Chiefs could win five more Super Bowls, Kramer, and I don't think you're ever going to see another game where they were down 24 to nothing in, like, negative time and then come back to win by plus 20.
Yeah, this is one of the first games that's happened like this. This is just a game that's an anomaly, and it's good for the Chiefs to notice that, hey, we had that bye week. Yes, we did not come out performing that first quarter, but we showed out in the final three. They usually see the Chiefs coming on the beginning of the season. You see them not really playing so well in that second half of the season, but this game right here, I mean, the playoffs. The season doesn't matter now. You got to the playoffs, they're the number two seed. They showed why they're the number two seed and one of the best teams in the AFC. And you've seen the Texans, they were just terrible after that first quarter.
And, you know, as to peel back the curtain a little bit, most of the people who you listen to on the radio, chances are they are fans of the teams. They just can't necessarily always be that way. But I myself am a fan of the Chiefs, and Kramer at least has been around enough Chiefs fans himself as well. And I think you have a little place in the Chiefs, in your heart for the Chiefs, and
well,
maybe a Raiders fan.
Growing up, I was a Priest Holmes fan, so I mean,
can't beat that.
At least have some sort of Chiefs with me, so that's good.
And so you also followed him, though. And so for people our age, I'm 26, and he's a little bit younger than me. I mean,
23.
You're a little way younger than me, I thought. But nobody has seen anything like this. And it's one of those games that you can sit there and just, you'll be remembering probably who you're watching that game with if the Chiefs win a Super Bowl for maybe the rest of your life, as long as your memory serves you well. And there's good reason for that, though. This is one of the games where, as you watch the playoffs unfold, you just know, even before the Chiefs ever played a down in the playoffs, that this is not the regular playoffs. And this isn't just, I mean, obviously anything can happen in the playoffs, but this felt way more like the NCAA tournament where, you know, there's a handful of four teams going for the upset over the three. And I honestly think that when the game started, there was a little bit of that, oh my goodness, this 14 or 15 seed, even though this is a playoffs, are really about to come in here and knock off the two or three seed Chiefs, and as that equivalence goes.
Yeah, you can see it that way, and it's just the Chiefs, they were there, but they weren't. Like, stuff wasn't going their way, a muffed punt, they had a blocked punt as well. It was just, things weren't going right. Even the players were looking at their hands thinking, what am I doing wrong? Like, I usually make this catch. Why am I dropping this? Say, Travis Kelce in the first pass to him in the game. Went right through his hands, and he's just looking at it. Like, what is going on? DeMarcus Robinson had, what, two drops that were easable catches.
And one of them was on third down, and was, I believe it was the first third down drop. I could be wrong on that one now. But back-to-back drives going down, dropping him on third down, that's never a good way to go. But when you're also not only shooting yourself in the foot, but you're damn near stepping on mines, trying to blow it up by dropping the punts. And also, I don't even know who necessarily blew the coverage on that first drive where the Texans scored from like 55 out. I think it was Charvarius, but the coverage was so bad. I couldn't exactly tell. It looked like there should also be some safety help over top. And you start wondering, I hope the Juan Thornhill injury isn't going to be the end-all be-all after the first drive.
Well, that's the thing with the Chiefs. That secondary is a big question. That's what we talked about last week. We didn't know how good of an impact that with Juan Thornhill out, how the others will step up in that somewhat different style position, kind of like throwing Kendall Fuller in there, or when Charvarius Ward got dusted pretty much.
Yeah.
This was a big thing for the Chiefs to think, okay, that was that first quarter, but after that, they really settled down. They actually locked down the guys good. I mean, of course, they gave up those big plays to DeAndre Hopkins.
And he's going to get some, though.
I mean, yeah, you got to spread the field at some point. Plus, most of those times where they spread the field was when the game's already 20 points out of reach. So it's like those were garbage time like stats and statistics right there. So you really can't take a factor into that, but they did improve a lot well after that first quarter. Like, everybody, I don't know if it's because what Patrick Mahomes said to them on the sideline, or is this if everybody collective agreement saying, all right, slap myself in the face, we got this. It's the second quarter, there's a crap ton of football left, so why not? Let's get it.
And see, I think it can be both, though, because I think that not only was, because we have physical evidence of Patrick Mahomes going out there being a leader on the sidelines, but even if he would have sat there and not done anything, as long as they're not looking at him crying or something, I think that they know as long as Patrick Mahomes is our quarterback, it should be the same way for the Texans and for the Ravens and a couple of other teams even, that we have blank as our quarterback. But it is not as apparent with anybody that I can tell as it is with Patrick Mahomes. And you saw that there, down 24-0 and go on to score, I believe it was 34 unanswered points?
Yes.
30?
Yes, it was 34.
34 unanswered points. 51 points scored in just 45 minutes of football. Technically less because they didn't score on the first second of the second quarter. Just think about that. And I was talking to on 610 about this with Jay Binkley. It feels like after that first quarter, if you could just take that away and make it equivalent to the rest of the quarters, that would have been a 73-0 game. 73-3. Like, not literally, but I mean,
yeah, take away the first quarters, yeah, it could have been a completely different game, but it would have been a blowout no matter what, the way that the final score ended. You can classify the 51-31 still kind of a blowout. That's almost three scores. But the thing that really impressed me the most was the awareness of Patrick Mahomes the entire game. He knew what he was doing. He knew he was dialed in everything. You can even go back to the play where he is doing the touchdown pass to Travis Kelce, and he had his back right foot dragging across the line, which he knew that he was going to pass that. He knew he was going to pass that line of scrimmage, the invisible line, but the fact that he had the awareness to actually keep that toe back there and drag that across and able to complete the pass to Travis Kelce, that was one of the big key moments that I thought of, okay, Patrick Mahomes is locked in. This is going to be deadly. This is going to be scary. He even had some breakaway plays because everybody was thinking, oh, they're going to throw it to Kelce downfield. They're going to throw it to Sammy Watkins downfield. They're going to throw it to Tyreek Hill downfield. That's the thing about the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes is they're deadly enough to where they get so far downfield that it spreads the coverage everywhere. Patrick Mahomes can do a little shimmy and go 12 yards and get that first down if they need to.
And he's smart. He doesn't not – some quarterbacks will tuck it early. He doesn't. He knows he can extend the play and then just use his arm to make throws from anywhere on the field, man. He can throw pylon to pylon, it feels like. And in this game, because of that, it makes you wonder, has there ever been a crazier win in Chiefs history? I don't think there has been. I mean, obviously there's never been a crazier win in playoff history, so that automatically should give it a little bit extra boost. But I can't think of any game crazier in Chiefs history, although maybe the closest one would be a loss. The one against the Colts, I believe, in 2013 in the playoffs, or 14.
It was one of the Colts ones. It's always a Colts
when they're up by a bunch and they end up losing, I believe, 45-42. Stuff like that.
I was against Andrew Luck, I believe, in 2015.
That sounds right. That does sound right. And it still stung with me. My dad was in the kitchen when we scored our first touchdown, Kramer. I made him stay, me and my mom, she's not innocent, made him stay in the kitchen until we were up by like, until KC was up by 20 points. And then really, I wasn't too cool with him coming back in. Maybe an injury could bust off or something. But they got through it healthy. It was okay. Do you have any superstitions? Are you superstitious?
Not when it comes to football. Of course, Major League Baseball. Like, I mean, I'm a former baseball player. I know that I'm superstitious. I pick my feet up going across train tracks when I'm driving my truck. I mean, of course, I'm going to coast a little bit. Black cats going in front of me. I always turn right or left. I don't keep going that straight line.
Sure.
I mean, stepping on cracks. I mean, that doesn't bother me at all. But I there's sort of certain things that I will do. Say, like, I don't know. What, say, if still keeping the baseball reference, I always tap the far side of the plate before I bat every single time, no matter what.
Me too.
I always do that to make sure, like, okay, I'm ready. Even loosen the gloves up every single time and retighten them. That's just my superstition stuff that, okay, I have to do this in order to actually improve and whatnot. I mean, does it really happen? No. But still,
well,
it's the fact that it counts.
Do you think that it doesn't happen? Because there was that one Chiefs fan who left the game early, and he made it known it wasn't because he's a sore loser. It's because he believed the team would be able to come back if he left. And Kramer, that's a man. Do you know how much them tickets probably damn near cost him?
Over 300.
I'm going to be like, look, there are some things that are more important to me than if this team wins and my money wasting $300. But you know what? Shout out to him. He's a real one for that. Did you give up in this game? Because I did. I was texting everybody. I was like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah. And this game is over. I don't even know if some people were watching the game. I told them, yeah, hey, by the way, if you're watching the Chiefs, it's over. I'm sorry. I'm not that person necessarily. I was when the Royals were down to the Astros too. I was telling everybody, yeah, well, it was a fun season. Thought we would get back, but no, they couldn't do it. And then next thing you know, history was made.
So for myself, I did not think the Chiefs were out at this moment. But But of course, I went to social media, kept saying, like, "Oh, the Texans are going to do this." That's because I like being that person. I like being the heel.
You like being the troll.
Exactly. And but I knew for a fact Mahomes can go 28 points in one quarter, because he did that week two against the Raiders. So I know what Patrick Mahomes can do and what he can do in just one quarter. Give him 12 minutes exactly. That's how many minutes he needed to get those 28 points, which is really stupid. You just cannot count out the reigning MVP. That's what people probably have forgotten right now, even like watching this game, because, I mean, this is probably one of this entire NFL playoffs have been one of probably the best playoffs to watch. And, of course, ratings are probably up right now. It's the NFL. Everybody watches it. But going into this game, people are thinking, oh, it's first quarter. Deshaun Watson is looking great. What did Deshaun Watson do after the second quarter? What did Patrick Mahomes do after the second quarter?
And part of that was the reason why Deshaun was so good in the first quarter was because that the Chiefs essentially willed him to the finish line in those ways. Now, Deshaun still had to make the plays, and so did the running backs. But with that being said, and the line, they did okay for a while there as well. But with such a short field on, you know, two possessions, and then one, you just score from 55 yards out.
And you got to thank Bill O'Brien, because he was a complete lunatic being a coach right there. Why would you go for a field goal when it's 4th-and-1 and you're in your red zone right now?
Yeah, there were a few instances where when I was sitting there, I'm like, am I thinking about this like a Madden perspective?
Why go for a fake punt?
See, and that one, and you know what? I would have been okay with that maybe on the drive before when it was 4th-and-1, or if they wouldn't have done the whole fiasco of, are we going to go for it? Are we not? Let's call a timeout. And if that didn't happen, then I would have been even a little bit more okay with it. But my fat ass is standing there jumping up and down telling Mom they're going to fake punt. And then next thing you know, Dirty Dan.
Yeah, no,
the dirtiest Dan in the man. Oh, that's what a
man. That's the thing. When you see punt coverages, Dan Swartzen was already playing like he was going to be, it's a fake punt. Like, usually on that side, he's usually more lined up more to the edge, or he's on the opposite side getting ready to run back there to help block. No, he stayed and moved over and hovered a little bit over, like, the back behind the defensive tackle on the right side.
Yeah.
And he was able to, I mean, it was 3 yards. 3 yards is a lot to come from, and he's going at an angle. If that runner who got the football, like, the name is skipping me right now.
Sure.
And if he would have went straight, he probably would have got it. That's the thing. He went around his block. If he would have went in through his block, they probably would have got it. But Swartzen was in that right gap at the right time. And if the people who hiked the ball, they should have seen that, call a timeout, do something different. I mean, they already gave up one timeout already earlier on in the first quarter. So, I mean, they already gave up one. Why didn't give up another?
And Dan really did have, you know, just to...
He balled out.
Yeah, he balled out. I will tell you what, Kramer. It almost looked like Dan was playing with a cheat code. You know, why would that be brought up today except for, while we're on the topic of the Astros' misery, before we get into this Chiefs-Titans matchup, because that is ultimately, now that the greatest comeback in playoff history is over, now it's time to look forward to arguably the biggest game that there's been one other time, the Patriots last year, where we as Chiefs fans of our age, Kramer, have ever felt this way, and for a lot of the people listening. So enjoy this week coming up. You never know if you're going to get back to it. But in the meantime, something big happened in Houston, and the Astros may not be getting back to the World Series either for a while. Kramer?
So what I saw on Twitter today, it was one of the Major League Baseball headlines that there was breaking news the entire time. This is per Ken Rosenthal. The MLB penalties for the Astros include 1-year suspension with general manager Jeff Luhnow and manager A.J. Hinch. They also lose their first and second round draft picks for both 2020 and 21. And they also were fined $5 million. So that was sent down because of their cheating scandal. They had the Band-Aids. They were hitting
stuff. In the trash can. They were experimenting with whistling and clapping. And
they were doing pretty much anything they wanted to do in order to get an edge on their opponents and trying to, I mean, of course, hit that fastball, because that's the main thing. You hit the fastball, the ball goes far. When you hit that with a direct good launch angle, but that's the thing.
And also, if you're sitting on a curveball, if you're sitting on a changeup, they would hit the can one time for one off-speed pitch and two for a different one. Then I didn't see the details on what pitch they would do for which, but that's huge. If you know whether it's a fastball, maybe changeup or et cetera, or a curveball coming,
a huge edge.
That's a huge edge. That's unfathomable for people who don't play baseball. That would be like knowing what play is coming every single time if you're a linebacker. Even less. It's even less of an advantage to a linebacker to have that than it would be for baseball. And it's not something that has been taken lightly. One angle from Robert Flores on Twitter: this is the worst 24 hours in the history of Houston sports.
That's true.
A staggering, unprecedented day. And I can't say anything. I mean, yeah.
And then about 45 minutes after that story was broke of how what they're going to do to them, AJ Hinch was fired and Jeff Luhnow was also fired as well.
That's the GM and the or Hinch being a young former player and now turned into the manager who won a World Series here in 2017.
Exactly.
For the Astros.
And so, I mean, he's going to be suspended still for that 1 year. Then he can do what he wants after that. Maybe it goes back into management because he's still a good manager.
Yeah.
It's just, and he even said that I had nothing to do with anything. And it was a pretty bad apology. It wasn't even an apology. He was like, I still have nothing to do with this. I don't understand why this and that. So that's not all the full details on that, but still, he's still not claiming that he had any sort of claim with all of this. But he's also even said that he does apologize for not trying to stop anything if he knew it.
See, and that's where I have my issue as well. Not that it's ultimately I'm just a fat boy in Kansas City. I don't know what the hell actually was happening in there, but according to reports I had seen on Twitter, I'm not even going to quote who it was because I don't remember off the top, but they were saying that anybody within proximity of the dugout was able to hear what was happening. They were able to hear that this, like, there's obviously some audible stuff going on here. And then I saw another tweet that allegedly the cheating equipment was literally left out in the open to the point that it actually made an appearance on the World Series, post-World
really?
Series DVD. I mean, just not only, I mean, this is the exact opposite of Belichick. Not because they aren't trying to cheat, but because they aren't trying to cheat well. I don't understand how you could do this. And of course, if any of that is true, then Hinch has to know it.
You know, it'd be funny is the Astros are the most, people didn't realize they were cheating because it was so out in the open. But it's so easy to find, like, the Patriots cheat because, oh, the balls are deflated. We have to do tests and whatnot. Now, they're, like, wide out in the open, and they can actually, like, show – people can actually see what they're doing.
But they didn't know what was happening.
Yeah, exactly.
It is insane. It's legitimately one of the craziest stories in a long time in baseball. And a lot of people aren't very happy with the reaction by Major League Baseball. A lot of people, first off, Carlos Beltran, former Royal and future Hall of Famer, was right at the center of this controversy. You wonder how that tarnishes his career, possibly, or his legacy. But furthermore, though, it makes you wonder just what the exact who was involved in this and why are only two people getting suspended? Why is, as I saw on Twitter from somebody else, about the average price of a utility infielder, why is that the cost for cheating to win a World Series? And what precedent does this set for Major League Baseball? It's not a good look, no matter how you slice or dice it.
So that's the thing with Carlos Beltran. He was a player at the time, and they've already said players are completely fine. They're completely they're sanctioned. They're fine. They're actually going to be able to play and whatnot because that would be too much. But is it, though? Carlos Beltran is now a manager for the New York Mets. That's not going to play any type of role of how, like, oh, he's not going to be suspended or anything like that because he was a player at the time. So it makes sense of why they do not want to suspend him. But I do not think that this is enough to the Astros to say, hey, you guys did this, but there should be more punishment rather than $5 million losing their first and second round draft pick, which most Major League Baseball players are from fifth round to wherever the draft ends, because it seems like it always adds more players at the end every single year. It's always that type of chunk of players. Usually the first through five usually flutter out. So, I mean, if you want to go into this, like saying, okay, a three-year suspension would be a great idea for manager Hinch and for Jeff Luhnow. Yeah, a three-year suspension, because that's 3 years is long enough. There's, what, 162 games? If you do simple math right there, it's close to 1,000 games right there. They're gone. And now, wait, that was way off. Maybe 1,000, maybe 500 games. I don't know. It's a lot of
162
baseball.
162 times 3 is at least, 450 or so.
All right, there you go. Math is not my strong
point anymore.
It's
about, 490 or so. I mean, that's a lot of games, but this is a lot of cheating. This is a lot of magnitude. I mean,
this is the World Series, man. Like, this is the grandest stage of Major League Baseball. You have to make sure you're playing the cards right. You should not be cheating at this point in the season. You should at least go with your gut instincts of, hey, this is a curveball. I'm going to swing at it and hit a home run with it because that's what my strong suit is. I hit curveballs for home runs.
Oh, if it was that easy, though. I feel you. I hear what you're saying, and I think a lot of the listeners would agree with that to some extent. Although, the only part of it is that, like, it should never have happened. It shouldn't have happened in May. It shouldn't have happened in July. It shouldn't have happened in August. And the fact that it literally continued all the way to the World Series to me is inexcusable. And I'm not saying that what Pete Rose did, for instance, is right. I think that there is a proper punishment there, at least to some extent, right?
Oh, yeah.
But you betting a nickel or a dime on your team to win versus literally throwing the World Series almost, like not throwing it in terms of making your team lose, but giving your team a unnatural, unfair advantage to win the World Series. This happened in the NFL where like Deflategate happened in the NFL, for instance, I couldn't see such a light punishment, even as bad as the NFL has been in handling punishments over time. This is a big deal, and it'll have a few more developments we'll probably talk about here soon. The Red Sox will be getting in trouble with this also as well, reporting by Jeff Passan. So there'll be more to talk about here, Kramer. But ultimately, right now, this is the biggest story in Houston, probably. Those two stories are the two biggest in Houston. And one of those is the biggest in Kansas City, but the second biggest story in Kansas City, maybe the first now, Chiefs and Titans. This is the game that we've been waiting for so long as Chiefs fans, or even just as members of Kansas City. We need a reason to celebrate sometimes. And it took a long time to get there with the Royals, and it's taken even longer with the Chiefs, going into the 50th year of not having a Super Bowl victory, excuse me. No, it's only been 47 years, but 50th anniversary of the first Super Bowl. It certainly is one of those times, though, that there's a lot of question marks ahead of this game for the fact that they're the second team, the second seed versus the lowest seed in the AFC. It doesn't break down quite that cleanly, in my opinion. This isn't necessarily even the ideal matchup, I don't think, for the Chiefs going into that. Kramer, in your opinion, is this one of the matchups that the Chiefs would have ultimately love to have in the AFC Championship game? Or do you think there's anybody that would have fit in there a little bit better?
I mean, it's always cool to see the Titans go that far. It's been a while since we've seen Titans.
It's a cool story.
Yeah, it's a huge story. I mean, it'd been nice to see the Lamar Jackson-type angle against Patrick Mahomes. That would have probably been the better storyline, but if you're the Kansas City Chiefs right now, you should be nervous.
For everybody who's making comparisons between the Chiefs and Texans game with the 2014 and 15 Royals, there's another one there between the Titans and the 2014 Royals, kind of coming out of nowhere to get this far. And obviously, they want to get as far as the Royals did or further in 2014. How does this matchup feel for the Chiefs to you, though? Because when I look at this matchup, I think that, I don't think it's the ideal matchup. I think it's one they should still win. I don't think anybody is complaining about playing the Titans in the AFC Championship game in Kansas City. This is a matchup, though, that I think the Chiefs they can't get away with some of the things that happened last week against the Texans. They cannot get away with those. You cannot get down 24 points to a team that's going to run the ball as efficiently as the man-child himself, Derrick Henry, and the Titans.
I mean, we saw 2 years back the Chiefs blew a 21-3 lead against a backup quarterback. Now, that's going to be the big thing going in their minds of the players that were still there. And I still feel like the Chiefs are in trouble for this game. We saw earlier on in the season the Titans were down, and guess what they did? They did not throw the ball. They ran the ball constantly. And yes, Chris Jones was in that game. Yes, Chris Jones may not be in this game because of his calf injury, or he may even still be in or be not.
Right. They might pick his spots a little bit closer this time than they would otherwise, which could be a disadvantage for the Chiefs for sure.
The Texans should have won that game against the Chiefs. Because one factor is because bad play calling, and one of the bad play callings is they went away from the run. This is a team, the Titans, that will not go away from the run, even if they're down. And we saw that against the Chiefs earlier on in the season. Derrick Henry is going to have a stupid amount of carries like he has the past three games. He's going to have over 150 yards like he has the past three games. That's what we're going to be given there. And if that's going to be enough for the Chiefs, I mean, we saw it's been enough against the Ravens. It was enough against the Patriots.
Sure.
And it was enough the entire season in order to get into the postseason. So you got to think that the Titans are going to have to be on their A game. They're going to have to make sure they're blocking great like they've been the entire time. But the Chiefs need to be scared and not be thinking, oh, we need to be kicked back and relax. All they're going to do is run the ball. If I'm not wrong, that's the worst thing for the defense is that run.
Absolutely. I mean, and in my keys to victory here, there's three things, and the number one has to be stop the run, Kramer. There's no way around the fact that if the Titans, granted the Chiefs are the best teams the Titans have played in the playoffs, in my opinion, I still think they were better than the Ravens. I think playing the Ravens in Baltimore would have been rough, but they're still, I think, a better team overall than the Ravens. And even with that being said, though, you just saw Ryan Tannehill throw a combined 160 yards in two games, less than that, actually, less than 150 in two playoff victories. That is scary. And that's why you had to stop the run. But on that same note, point number two ties into that. You have got to cut the mistakes. You cannot get away with hardly any of the mistakes. You can make a mistake or two in a football game. You get down 24-0, Kramer. Is there any way that you could even imagine the Chiefs being able to come back on the Titans if they get down by 24, 21, anything like that in the first quarter going into the second?
If they're down by two scores, they need to play catch the entire time, because the way that the offense works for that Titans is they're methodical. They'll take 7 to 8 minutes off that clock, and you may even have about six touches the entire time for the Chiefs if you're trying to go on and at least a drive or something like that. You need to convert like they did in seven straight consecutive possessions, getting a touchdown. That's what the Chiefs need to do. They cannot be behind the Titans, because what the Titans will do, they'll run it. And that's what we've seen them do that. That's their big thing. It's their strong suit. I mean, if you're going to play smart football like Vrabel's been coaching this entire time, is
yes.
you're gonna have to run the ball when you're up by 7, maybe 14.
Yeah, and the Titans are extremely well-suited to step on the throats of teams, unlike the Chiefs, I think, are in that way. Although, the thing that the Chiefs do differently, they're not always getting the rushing yardage, but they are doing a lot of low-risk plays, you know, the little outs, little screens and whatnot. That might only get,
there, yeah.
You know, just a little stuff that essentially is, you know, not even like an actual slant pass across the middle, but like when you send Blake Bell out just a couple of steps to the side, I just blanked what it's called, like a bubble screen, for instance. Like those sort of things generally do play to a handoff in the Chiefs offense. So while you can come back in some way there from a score or maybe two, it better be early. And you have got to cut the mistakes. You cannot be doing this. And on that third note, as far as cutting the mistakes go, Kramer, coaching. Coaching is the third key to victory, but arguably as in any game, maybe the most important one. We need good Andy Reid on Sunday.
Yeah, you can't have the NFC type style Andy Reid anymore. Like that should be.
Or even in Kansas City, the one that doesn't know how to call timeouts or when to use them. No offense to Andy, because he knows more about football than any of us will ever. You know, he's forgotten more than we'll ever know. But there are times when you just know he's not managing the clock right, and those are really taking situations where you can take your team out of a game at times. It's happened multiple times over his time in Kansas City. Is that something that you can get by, in your opinion? If Andy Reid doesn't come out here, it is a close game. Do you think there's enough talent on the field for the Chiefs?
Oh, it's clearly, yes. There is enough talent there.
To get by a game where maybe Andy Reid isn't on his P's and Q's with the clock management?
That's the thing. I feel like Andy, the last time he had a mishap against the clock management was against Tennessee. That was the last time, the last game that's happened. And I don't see him doing that again. I really do not.
It hasn't happened maybe this year. Since then, it has happened in the past.
They lost that
nervous,
game because of that.
Yeah, I mean, arguably. I mean, that and you can't stop the run.
Yeah.
Those two things have to happen on Sunday. And if they do, there's going to be a whole lot of reason to celebrate. Before we get out of here, I want to play a quick game here. We're going to play Two Truths and a Lie. And it's very easy to explain. There's going to be two truths here and one thing that we think is not true. I'm going to ask Kramer first. Kramer, three things here. Frank Clark gets 3 sacks. Patrick Mahomes throws for 400 yards. LeSean McCoy leads the team in rushing. Which of those is the least likely to happen?
Well, it's clearly LeSean McCoy. He hasn't played at all in the past 3 games. So I'd have to say LeSean McCoy, but I want to hear your reasoning on the other two.
Okay, now let me ask you this real quick, though. If you were to go with Damian Williams there leading the team in rushing, does that change it for you necessarily? Because I put LeSean McCoy in there just because maybe this is the game they've been saving him for all this time, or you just really need a dog. And he could be that guy. It's what you got him for. Does it change if it's Damian Williams leading the team in rushing? Because I don't think it does.
No, I don't think it does either. But then again, I can also see that Frank Clark getting 3 sacks is going to be an anomaly. I don't see him doing that against that offensive line for Tennessee Titans.
Because they don't pass enough, if nothing else, though. Exactly. It may not be because Frank isn't having a career day, even. He just may not have the opportunity.
What, 2 sacks yesterday, which was nice.
I think he had 3.
3? Yeah.
I think, yeah.
And I know he was in the backfield a lot on Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. And that the last...
It seemed like 10 minutes, but it was a 10-second sack.
Yes. I believe that was the second to last one. The last one, I think, was kind of the dagger one where he came across the edge. And the reason why... So I think that the one that's most likely to happen would be Patrick throwing for 400 yards, just because I think that there is a chance that the Titans can get you down to the point that you're going to have to stick with the pass to some extent. Maybe not all the way down, but this is one of those games where I want to see them get the ball first and go down and score and not let Derrick Henry run 9 minutes off the clock. I think if Patrick can keep control of the game, they're going to stay passing the ball a lot, and that would be the key to victory most likely. It's kind of a weak secondary for the Titans. So that's where I'm going with this. Which one would you eliminate here? You said you would eliminate really any running back leading the team in rushing.
Yeah, exactly.
So who would you have leading the team in rushing if you were going to pick?
That'd be Damian Williams.
Okay.
Or Patrick Mahomes.
I think.
It depends on the situation. It really does, because Patrick Mahomes gets those chump yardage like I said earlier on the show, where everybody goes like a little flyer routes and he can just go for 15 yards and just step out of bounds, take a business decision.
Yeah, I mean,
he can easily do that. So if you just want to go a true running back, and that's Damian Williams.
Now, could you see anybody besides Patrick Mahomes, if it's not Damian Williams, leading the team in rushing?
No, no.
Could you see Mecole Hardman coming around on a little edge and maybe picking up 60 yards, taking it to the house, and maybe nobody gets over 60 yards rushing? I could see something like that.
I wouldn't say Mecole. I'd say Tyreek Hill. I wouldn't say Mecole.
I could understand that as well. I mean, it could be one of those two. They're almost interchangeable. It's why you get Mecole Hardman in the draft to replace Tyreek Hill, potentially, given what was happening at the time.
Now Sammy Watkins is the replacement there.
I mean, fair enough. Definitely a lot of interesting storylines ahead of the Titans game. And I love how both teams kind of feel like there's a little bit of an underdog. You know, there's a little bit of a chip on both teams' shoulders. You have one that nobody thought would be here, knocked off arguably. I mean, not to me, but arguably the best team in the playoffs in the Ravens. And then you have a team like the Chiefs who just the history there. We're up by 20 points. The Chiefs are up by 20 points, and I'm not letting my dad come back in the room to enjoy it because of where we scored our first touchdown once that comeback started happening. These are real things. These are real emotions. And most of you at home probably felt this if you are a Kansas City Chiefs fan. A lot coming up. Kramer, what is maybe one more thing here about the Titans game? Do you have any specific matchup that you think would be the go-to matchup of the game or maybe the catalytic matchup of the game here? What's the one thing that you can look at?
Before that, I actually had a little two truths and a lie if you want to get into that.
Oh, I forgot. My bad.
You're all good. So I have three, of course. They could be two lies. Maybe. Well, of course, it's going to be two truths. but I have the Titans. The Titans will force three turnovers. Ryan Tannehill will have 200 passing yards, and Travis Kelce will have another total of three touchdowns.
Give me that first one more time.
The Titans will force three turnovers.
Ooh. I think the most likely one to happen would be Ryan Tannehill throwing 200 yards passing because of the fact that I don't think the Chiefs are going to lose this game. I don't think that the Titans will be in a position where they can run the ball very well, or not very well, but for very much of the game. I don't think they can run it all throughout. I wouldn't be surprised to see Ryan Tannehill going over 200 yards. It's not every week that a quarterback stays under 200 yards. So even though it doesn't fit their game plan, to me, that's what it is, more so than TK getting back in the end zone three times. I think that was more of an anomaly, even maybe than Frank Clark's sacks, but not because of talent. Just that's a tough feat. It's a tough feat to do. Do you have an answer there?
My answer for personally is Travis Kelce another three touchdowns. I don't see them. I see the Titans double covering Travis Kelce, even possibly triple covering, and that's what's going to spread the field open for say Sammy Watkins or Mecole Hardman or Tyreek Hill
or Patrick Mahomes' legs.
Yeah, or his legs. I feel like that's what's going to happen. Travis Kelce is not going to get. I mean, I don't know how hurt he is. I know he came off, pled his case to get back into the game. That happened. I just don't see him getting another three touchdowns or having. He can have at least one, but I don't see him have another three. The thing with Ryan Tannehill and the 200 passing yards, that was kind of. I thought about that because there might be a chance where you might see his arm. I mean, he has two of them for a reason, so he can at least sling it around there a little bit. 200 yards is not much. I mean, we see him go 150 under that twice, it seems like. But, I mean, the way that Titans secondary has been playing also this entire season on that three turnovers thing, entire season, going into the playoffs, you picked off Tom Brady twice. You picked off Lamar Jackson, I think, either one or twice. You forced another turnover
twice.
That way. That this is with Kevin Byard and even with Kenny Vaccaro. These two guys for the Titans have stepped up a lot, and there's a reason why they stuck on this team for a long time, and they're legit, yes.
Yeah. But ultimately, though, to take the ball away from the Chiefs three times without the Chiefs putting the ball on the ground in just silly ways like they did last week seems like an awful lot of an ask, but probably one.
Probably a fumble and two interceptions. That's what I'm going for.
And it's probably going to be the way that the Titans were to win the game. If it ends up coming out that way, I would not be surprised if they are able to force turnovers if they win the game. But that's an awful big ask just to get it that way, in my personal opinion. But with that being said, though, a lot can happen. Maybe a few more developments across this week as we get to figure out what exactly it is we're going to be watching for on Sunday. Because right now, you know, you think you have an idea, but as we just learned this past Sunday, Kramer, we don't know anything about the playoffs. You don't know what's going to happen on these Sundays when any two teams in the playoffs line up.
I really thought Seattle was going to beat Green Bay last night, too.
Oh, a little Seattle action here, too, before we get out of here.
Yeah,
you
I
thought,
really did.
Who do you think is going to come out of the NFC?
49ers.
49ers, who do you think is going to be the best player of that game?
The NFC?
Yeah.
It's going to be, without a question, D Ford.
Who was your favorite athlete growing up?
Oh, it's easy. Sebastian Janikowski, the Polish leg. Let's go.
Oh, my gosh. You really are a Raiders fan, ain't you?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know if you can be. I like you a little bit too much, Kramer. This has been fun. This has been fun. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week. Might be Monday. Might be Tuesday. It might be Wednesday or Thursday.
Just know we'll have a podcast up next week.
Or
two.
Maybe three. Depends on what the Chiefs do. It's going to be a great week at 6:10 as well. Make sure to tune in for 50 straight hours of coverage after the game. And we will talk to you all then. Thanks for listening.